the future does not exist. Good morning, everyone. It's The Future Doesn't Exist with myself, Richard Foster. And to my right, as you can see, but if you use your ears, you can see Damien Leslie. And
hello.
To my left, I've got Marcel von Schoten.
I'm the one that looks like this.
Yes, I'm in your other earlobe.
And you look like that.
Yeah, you do. Here we are. And here we are again, talking about myth, memory, past things, the Netherlands, all the kind of weird psychogeographic, psychonaut stuff that pops into our minds from time to time.
But before we came on air, Marcel was just unrolling bits of paper.
Yes.
He was.
That's good.
I was inspired by a story from Richard about a paper.
Yeah.
And I remembered I found this roll of paper a couple of weeks ago. And I was just checking, and it was a very detailed map of Sweden.
Amazing. And I really want it.
Yes, but he's not going to get it.
You have a thing about maps, don't you?
I love it, yeah. I love them. My dad was in the Ordnance Survey. Yeah. When he left the army, he was in the forward observation team in the Coldstream Guards, which meant that he went out up front to check for your unit so they could, you know, make sure there's no trouble. And but he got to read maps, and he learned maps. I recently wrote about my dad, and there's one thing where I didn't actually know. I will get to maps in a second, but I just want to bring this in, is that when he joined the Ordnance Survey after he'd been in the Guards, he came out, he got an interview with the guy who dug up Sutton Hoo.
Oh.
Right? And he got the job by talking about Schubert's string quartets, but that's the sort of thing my dad would do, you know what I mean? And he became a member of the Ordnance Survey, and he mapped loads of the archaeological, he was part of the archaeological division, so they mapped a load of Wales, Northern England, Southwest England, with all the the stone circles and all the burial mounds and all the sort of the sites of special historical interest. Mm-hmm. And that was his job. But he also mapped loads of other things, like, you know, railway cuttings and police stations and all this sort of stuff. And I've got all these, I mean, I'm not joking, I've got hundreds of maps and Ordnance Survey books and sketches and all this sort of stuff, which I'm going to be using in exhibitions, because, you know, I've just got rolls of these maps, and I feel like I've got to do something with them.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've always had a thing with maps, possibly because my dad had a thing with maps, and I grew up with maps, and they were always around. And obviously I'm an artist as well, so these things always play into my mind in some way. And I sort of learnt to read maps from my dad, and you know, and when I was a kid, back when dinosaurs ruled the world, you know, you had to learn how to use a map, and you had to know what a scale was and how big an inch was to a mile, and all these kind of things where you'd be able to work out the ground, and you'd be able to go places based on how you read paper, and, like, you know, how a compass works. Now, I can vaguely remember how a compass works, but I used to be able to be very good at it.
Yeah.
And you're able then to get about. And to me, there's three things you've got to do in life. It's feed yourself, wash yourself, and get about, you know?
Yeah.
And so the first, when I first came to the Netherlands, the first thing I did was, like, literally the first thing I did was to learn the words for, eat, you know, for beer and for sandwiches or what have you. And then the second thing I did was to go and find a map. Then I felt all right and knew where I was. And in the days of paper, that was actually the way to, you know, pre-phones, if you will.
Yeah.
Your mobiles were about, but obviously they were just there to call people up. It was a case of, you know, you had to find a map to find out where you were. And, I mean, recently, the last episode, we talked about, you know, tourists looking on big maps, and that's that. I thought, oh, of course, you know, the maps in the Netherlands when I first came here were completely different to the Ordnance Survey maps that you got in Britain. Mm-hmm. Now, the OS is very famous because it was built on if I'm not mistaken, it's like based on triangles. Everything is based on a 3 points, and then you measure across to another 2 points of the triangle, and so on and so on, and you map the ground that way. I don't think that was done over here, or it was done in a different, maybe it was done in a different way because of the way that the ground was, because it's all, you know, it's polded, and, you know, it's basically run by water, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to look at maps in the Netherlands, which were either really, really vague. When I first got some, they were, like, useless. Mm. He might as well, a child could have drawn some of the things you get in, say, the holiday camping places where they said Nordvika. They have an arrow to Nordvika out, an arrow to Nordvika, and there's the camping bit, and there's the sea.
Yeah, so like, you would get maps like that that would miss out everything of note.
Yes.
Yeah. And like give you a detailed like description of an area that you don't care about, and then just have like an arrow pointing off as like Zandvoort that way. And I was
there was
how
nothing,
far?
Didn't tell you anything.
10
no.
minutes? 2 hours? What are we looking at?
I remember that was I the first day I got here, Saturday, April the 1st, 2000, you know, April Fool's Day, you know, what a day to come. And the next day I thought, all right, okay, I'm going to walk to my work. And it's, I thought, well, it's about 8 kilometres, 7 miles, something like that. I don't know, 10 kilometres. I should do it, fit enough. And of course, I got a map from Camping Downrest, which is now changed beyond all recognition.
Yeah.
And it was just this little piece of paper. It was just like a foldout, which sort of gave you an idea vaguely of where what was Nordvika. And then it sort of listed, they showed a road. And I thought, well, maybe it's that way. Because it says Lissa, and then I'll follow signs. And they started to follow the cycle signs. And that was actually really useful. But the thing was, of course, you forget that walking is different from biking it.
Yeah.
So a bike would take you sometimes the long way around. And it took me ages to get to Lissa, and I walked it, and then I walked back. I was in pieces when I walked back. I did about 25 miles walking.
Yeah.
In unsuitable shoes.
One of the things I noticed very quickly is even if you could see where you were going, like that's where I want to be, because of water, you weren't allowed to go straight.
No,
like,
go around.
You would like... it would always just be somewhere in the distance, and it was like one of my that ever since I was a kid, like you said, like be able to get about. For me, it was always be able to get your bearings.
So
one of the first things to do wherever I go anywhere and is like look for something tall, right? Something tall that I can use as like right. I'll recognize that and I'll know that I'm on this side, and that'll help me kind of get, because one of my favorite things is to just go to somewhere new and get lost.
Yeah,
just like just wander
totally.
Around. Blah, blah, blah. But like all the time, you kind of. Take a note, oh, that leads off here, and then kind of build a map in your head. Mm-hmm. You would do that in Amsterdam until you realize that about 5 or 6 of the churches all look very similar. And then you realize that, I'm completely lost because I've been following the wrong church for 20 minutes and this canal's gone in a U shape and I'm back where I was and now I don't know where. Yeah,
the classic Amsterdam thing of being on a bridge over a canal.
Yeah.
That was a classic. It's on a bridge near a canal. Oh, right. Well, that could be anywhere. Yeah. But it's like the other thing, talking of maps, the only other thing you notice about Dutch maps was if you got a cycle map, it was ridiculously detailed. Like, it's like absolutely amazing detail on them.
Yeah.
But again, it's sort of useless in the sense that, they are fantastic if you go cycling, but like if you're trying to walk anywhere, they're not very useful. What I mean? They're a bit so detailed that you're really... You are literally counting the rivulets on one of the polders, and they're amazing detailed maps. So it's like there's two kinds of maps. You had the road maps of the Netherlands, but again, that was like province size.
Yeah.
And it was, I was thinking like, they don't really have sort of, maps that you can use. You get the city maps, so you get the city maps in Leiden. They'd be surrounded by, there'd be loads and loads of adverts all over them. And then you had the Binnenstadt bit, and then you had the Viking. And again, I try to use those sometimes, but they're not.
No.
They're only useful in terms of knowing the out shape, the outline shape of a city. Mm-hmm. But they don't really give you a great deal of detail in the centre of the city. They're not like a London A to Z used to be.
And they don't show you which parts are one way or not.
No, they don't.
So I feel like I don't drive, which a lot of people find a bit strange. But I've always been the navigator, because I've always been good at reading maps. It amazes me how many people I know cannot read a map. Literally
it is really
get,
worrying,
like, it? Read it upside down and think they've got the... It bewilders me. It was like, because it's such a... It almost comes like easily to me, and it always has. And I'm just like, yeah, well, you just do that. That goes to there, isn't it? But it's like a language they don't understand.
Yeah.
It's really strange. Mm. But then you turn up to one of those village maps outside of it, and I'm lost. I'm just going to walk. because this makes no sense.
No,
like an abstract painting of a village that gives me no information.
Yeah.
The other thing was that they used to have the maps in the Netherlands used to have the big city map that would be the size, you know, be about 10 foot high and it'd be outside of a bus station or something like that. Do you remember those? And I think they're beginning to disappear, those things where
I think they completely disappeared because they've put in ads now.
Yeah, because they were great, those things, actually. They were actually the most useful thing you could look at because you thought, I can look at it. They were always near the train station or the bus station. Yep. You'd walk and there'd be one big map and it'd give you a list of everything that was there. And you could actually think, I can just about get this is all right, actually. And they were dead useful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're probably right. That's another part of the sort of disappearing face of Dutch cities or towns is the town map. Where you can see everything.
What you have now is there's an info stand near the station on a sunny day, and there's city hosts there, and they will give you a paper map or you how to use a QR code and get a digital one.
Okay, cool. So this is the new thing. I have to look out for that. I've not seen those yet. I mean, it's also something, talking about getting your bearings, like maps and getting my bearings. As Damien says, I'm the same. I like to walk around the city. A mutual friend of ours, going to Hecate, does exactly the same, where he actually just walks around somewhere and gets lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then finds his way back so he can work it out, which I think is really sensible, actually.
Mm-hmm. One of the best things you can do.
Yeah, it is. It also, the getting the bearings is also quite interesting now because in some ways maps are redundant given the pace of change in city centres in the Netherlands. Like Leiden, we know, like around that. I'm trying to map out a story at present about someone going to work who'd be living right across from the station in the flats that are now going to get renovated and get done up, and you know where some of our friends live or you lived, and then this person's going to go to Multiplex to pick up his bike and then talk about where the sand pit was and the serb and all this sort of stuff. And then he's going to cycle. He's going to go up directly along the train line. Now, because that area's been so developed in the past 10 years, I mean, 10 years ago is unrecognizable to now.
I'm curious if there's a paper map that has your house on it.
Precisely. Hmm. Yes, and also I'm curious, is anyone, I mean, you've probably got loads of photographs, Marcel, but I'm curious, is anyone taking photographs about that stuff? Because when you go online looking for photographs of Leiden 1999, Leiden 2005, there's nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing. And this is also, where are the official photographs of the city, of that area now, and how do you get hold of them? So a lot of things that in the last 10 years we've almost forgotten to map out via photographs of by a city map, if you will, those bits of the town that have completely changed outside of the people who are developing it.
Yeah.
So you're thinking to yourself, like, is there any public record of how the station looked in 2000? And I would wager there isn't.
Probably newspapers have Argus.
Probably the Leinster Dagblad. Yeah.
The very first thing is you would walk out the station and just hit 2 million bicycles.
Well, yeah.
They were just parked. Like there wasn't a. They were just like the what's that? Almost it's not like the forecourt of the station used to just be a pile of bikes. You used to have to you had to walk all the way around that before you could then head off into town.
Yeah.
And then they built that lovely kind of underground bike park and stuff and kind of cleaned it up. And the bus station, they got all of it like irrevocably changed.
Yeah, it has.
In principle, the same thing happens. Train station is there, bus station is there.
But this is the interesting thing about Leiden.
Yeah, but the bus station has moved a bunch of times already.
Yeah, and this is so fascinating, isn't it? Because you think Leiden never changed. You think it's such a lovely, sleepy old city. And you look back, even to the 60s, right? I was looking at Leiden, again, because I'm into maps and I'm into looking at old photographs of old cities. Completely changed.
Yeah.
Completely changed. You know, there are certain market buildings, of course, the Breestraat. The streets run the same pretty much. But like at the bottom where like the Zorgen Zekerheid is and where Hoogvliet is and, you know, the place where, near the old Jewish, you know, where I used to live, around that neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. That's really changed in the last 20 years. You would not, I mean, you go back, it was the main thoroughfare through the city. Cars, buses, you name it, and everything. Completely changed. So what's interesting is that the idea of these towns never changing, but actually really changing, and especially now when I'm trying to map something of recent memory. Recent memory is the biggest lost memory of all memories, mm-hmm. because you think you know it and you don't.
No.
So if you can now, I mean, I'd like to do a thought, I want to do a live thought experiment on my two colleagues here on the radio. What I'm going to do is I'm going to say, all right then, let's say we've just got off the train from Amsterdam, mm-hmm. after a bit of a day out, and we're coming back to Leiden. It's a nice sunny evening. We walk out the front end of the station for yes. a start. Okay. Then. What do we see?
What, now or years ago?
In 2000.
In 2000.
What do we see?
We look, bikes. Bikes, first of all.
But to our left, we see the bikes, don't we?
As you walked out the main door of the station, there would just be like a sea of bicycles in front of you.
Mm-hmm. I think they were already gone around the 2000s.
I remember on the left there was
because
a lot of
I
bikes.
Referred it to Sub, and when Sub was there, the bike thing was already there.
Well, I arrived in 99, and they were definitely there then.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
So maybe like that yeah, 2000. I think earlier, they're probably still.
No, gone. I think that the you had all the bikes there. Yeah. And I'm not sure where the buses were. I'm not sure if the buses were already on the right.
The buses were definitely on the right.
Yes.
The Are you buses sure?
Were absolutely. Yes. Certainly. Definitely.
Are you yeah. sure yeah, they were
absolutely.
Not?
Yes. No. And there were some on the back side as well.
But there were some on the back. Yeah.
And,
no. yeah.
But you still had. Did you still have the? You still had the big Hoogheemraadschap building, the square one.
The big square one was there. Definitely.
Where now the other ugly one is.
Yep, that's right. So what we're going to do is we're going to go. We're looking left. Mm-hmm. We're both established. But that's where basically the bikes were congregated. Whether they're on a flat plane.
Yeah.
And I do remember there was a flat plane in 2000, and then about 2002-03, they started to build those racks for the bikes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's where they were. So basically that was a bike bit.
Yeah.
Which is now a taxi rank, and all the bikes are underground.
Yeah.
And they have this nice big sort of taxi thing. So a big pile of bikes there. Mm-hmm. And then to the left, mm-hmm. looking down Stationsweg, I'm going to go from left to right, okay? To the left, you looked up and you saw this big black building, which we all knew as a multiplex, and a ginormous 555 on the side of that. That built there's always that big 555 thing just written on the side of that building.
For
one disaster or another, but it was always there. But it was just big black tower, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At what period was that area? And then, of course, yeah, it was like a sand pity kind of no man's land there, wasn't it? There's nothing there for years and years and years.
Yeah, there was a. It wasn't a sand pit. It was a there was a foundation for another building that never came there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes. There used to be another very ugly tall building that was demolished. Mm-hmm. Then they created another foundation for another building that never happened because the owner of the other building did all kinds of horrible things and made sure that the builder go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And what happened is that foundation filled up with water.
That's right. Yeah,
and it turned into this massive lake. Swamp kind area. And after a while, the council got annoyed with it and put fences up in front of it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. It was the big swampy. That's right. But then you had, to the left of there, beginning of the Stationsweg, mm-hmm. you had a big bank. You had the ABN AMRO Bank, which is now gone.
Yeah. There's already a new building there.
Yeah, there's a big concrete building there.
Yeah.
And it had like some sort of 1970s sort of futuristic frieze on the front. But it's a huge big concrete bank with pillars and everything.
Yeah.
And you could get your money out there. Mm-hmm. And then behind that, they had an old building from about 1890, which had survived all the bombing of the RAF. And it was like it stood there. And then you had another building, and then you had a gap, and then you had another building, which is Eigenzorg. And you had
No, the Eigenzorg was connected to ABN.
Oh, the Eigenzorg is connected to ABN, that's right. But then you had a nice building just before.
Next to that was the kibbutz, which is still there.
No, they definitely knocked an old one down. They're absolutely definitely. And it was like a sort of, almost like a VVV building or come to life.
Yeah. No. It was a dancing club 70, I guess.
Yeah, so there we are.
That burned down.
Right.
And then the building was demolished.
Yeah. So you have these buildings, they've all gone. All gone. in the last 10 years. The whole lot has gone. And then you had the Eichensorg, which is now closed, which is one of the weirdest pubs in the world. We should definitely one day talk about the Eichensorg. Mm-hmm. So after that, now we have the Brown & Bone, and what was then the Central Cafe, Central Station Cafe, but now is something else. Mm-hmm. On the right-hand side, the bus station, which actually has also changed quite a bit since 2000, even though you don't notice it. Like they've added, I think the ramp, I think the way that the buses come in is different. It's a bit less haphazard.
Yeah.
Right across from it, you had the big, we still have now the flats, but are getting done up and done up and done up. Mm-hmm. And then to the right, there was not that bus lane. There was something else, wasn't there?
There was a restaurant, like a Chinese restaurant or something.
That was in the front where they're now building the other thing. There was a restaurant. You had the Aldi was...
I'm talking like underneath the train lines.
If you
come out, like, and so you would have bikes in front of the station, you would have buses, then there would be more bikes alongside the train lines. And then there's a little tunnel where the buses go under. On that corner, there used to be a restaurant there.
I'm not sure.
It used to be a kind of Chinese or restaurant or something on that corner. And then that got done away with because that was there before they put all of the what used to be in the station, like the Burger King and this, that, and the other, that all used to be in the station. Mm-hmm. Then that was kicked out and put across from the station.
Yeah.
But before that was all built, there used to be a restaurant on the left hand.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Left hand side.
To bring the listener back into it, the incredible amount of change around Leiden Station. Is mirrored, I would say, pretty much all over the country, including Amsterdam Central and all the rest of it, where Amsterdam Central, in front of where's the Victoria Hotel, there was a little Victorian pagoda-like thing where the three roads crossed. It was impossible to cross a road in front of Amsterdam Central Station in the 2000s, and then it all became more pedestrianised, etc. But it's all these things are completely changed. Harlem Bus Station, again, completely changed in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And it goes on and on and on. And I'm not really sure if anyone's actually got any, taken any sort of memory, sort of snapshots or drawn it out or tried to define it at all. Mm-hmm. So when I'm trying to write things, I'm thinking, I can remember it vaguely in my head where it was, but there's no visual clues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we go back, I'll give you another one. When I was writing, I was thinking, all right, then I'll go back to when I first ended up in the Netherlands, camping down the Rust. And I thought, I'll cycle back, went back with Mariska. And I've got some photographs of, you know, the sort of the sort of camp-like conditions of where I was staying in my caravan. The whole lot's gone. There's only one, the building itself, down the wrist itself, but that's all been smartened up and they've got big privet hedges around it now. But there's a phone box. That's it. The old phone box is there. Mm. The rest is completely gone. It's still a camping site. It's completely changed in the last 10 years, 15 years maybe. And this is the interesting thing about who is mapping this stuff. And are there any maps, the records of SUB now, or your photo? I'll ask you live on air. I need to borrow all your photos so I can find out why, what the hell it looked like around the outside of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be writing about it. And I'm thinking, I can vaguely remember it. I drew it.
Yeah.
But remembering this stuff is completely gone now.
Oh yeah.
There's no records.
During the whole period that we were there in that building, it changed so much.
Because the
first time we went in, the amount of square meters we occupied was huge. It was huge. We almost took the whole area where now the whole new building is.
Mm.
God.
And it got smaller and smaller, but it was still a massive amount of square meters.
Mm.
So this is it. I would say this is something to remember when you. Also something like Hillcom has changed a lot.
This happens at everywhere at all levels, but it is interesting when you. Especially when it's something that's been a place that's quite formative to your existence, so to speak. Oh, yeah. I had the same thing. I went back to Bradford where I was at university.
Yeah.
And Bradford seemed to have never changed for 30 years when I was there.
Yeah.
And nothing was updated or this, that. And then I was there for like 4 years. By the fourth year, a couple of pubs had changed, you know, like, and I mean a couple. Like a couple of things got done up and they made something new. And then I'd pop back like a year later and some people were still living around there and like, oh, there's a new pub there or this, that, new there. And then there'd been a gap of about like 4 or 5 years and I went back and like everything I knew had been demolished. Like yeah. Everything. The first house that I lived in, like the halls of residence, gone. Yeah. Completely wiped. Then the pubs that were like the pubs that we used to like our kind of circuit, there were only two left where there had been nine. And then everything was like, no, that's gone, that's changed, that's it. And it was like everything that meant my Bradford had been like, they'd gone, no, we'll just clean this away. It's like that generation should not be spoken about again. Let's wipe the slate clean.
It is interesting that.
And
eh?
It's really interesting to go back into pubs that have such strong like connections or strong emotions and stuff and memories attached to them and to go in there and go, wow, this is not the same place. It's a really kind of dislocating feeling to be in and just go like, wow, there used to be this thing there, but it's not there anymore. And it really kind of makes you kind of examine your own kind of space a quite a bit and just like, did it actually happen? Is it real? Was it true? What am I? And it's really kind of interesting. And like you say, like in Hillegom, the two main bars that we used to drink in all the time, the Kleiner Burrs and Murphy's, are still there, but they are worlds away from what they were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like I would say even a different universe compared to what Murphy's was. Mm-hmm. And then Harlem, we talked about on this podcast many times about One Love, about the crack, about the Melkfoot, all gone. All gone. Yeah. One Love, the building is still there. It's still a bar.
I don't know where the Melkfoot was now. I don't even know where it was. I know it was on the street going towards what was... You know, what is the Patronat, but it's like one of the main posh streets out. But the Melkfoot was like, to me, that's one of the best bars. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place, but it, from the shop front now, or whatever front it is, it's unrecognisable. I lost my bearings totally.
The building is exactly the same, but you would walk past it without seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I was in a car with somebody and we were on our way to their place in Noordwijkerhout. Mm-hmm. And we went on a road towards Voorhout, and I was like, "This I've never seen this road."
And that's around the back of I know where you are. Yeah,
there's a completely new road.
New road, yeah, that's right.
And she was like, "Yeah, it's very confusing. This road is new, and I'm not sure where we're gonna end up." And I was like, "Okay," and then we ended up like, "Hey, I know this part."
Yeah,
like, wow,
it's completely.
But
changed.
If you think about a town like Voorhout, it's multiplied.
Yeah. I think Voorhout's gone by three times.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that whole area.
Yeah. Dormitory like, now.
Voorhout into Noordwijkerhout is there's no gap.
No.
But like the one that gets me is New Vennep. New Vennep used to be a tiny little village.
Yeah.
And then there'd be like here there'd be Beinstorp and then there'd be Hoofddorp and there was masses of space in between.
Yeah. Gone.
There's no space anymore.
There's no space. No.
It's all just New one Venep, massive place.
New Vennep is a secret commuter town for Amsterdam. There's no doubt in that. And it's like really funny because...
I don't think it's very secret.
Well, not now.
It's like a giant monopoly.
Huge now, New Vennep. And I mean, I know this because my dentist is still in New Vennep. And I've seen New Vennep grows as my teeth have fallen out. And it's just, you know, the amount of... extra building in New Vennep is wild, and when you find the original middle bit,
yeah,
it just feels like completely lost within this thing.
It doesn't look right.
Doesn't look right at all because you can imagine it. It was like it was a crossroads, mm-hmm. and you had the old bit of village,
yeah,
and then you had like the Chinese and everything, which is still there, but then you go past that and you're in sort of the Vapsevelde and all the sort of areas and everything. It's just massive. And then they're starting to build another bit of New Vennep on the other side now.
Yeah.
Which is just basically going to be like a ring around Hoofddorp. Yeah. So I reckon it's going to get to Abinus, and you're going to have this thing where the whole thing will be one big corridor for building. And it's also where I'm living. I mean, having said that, the interesting thing about where I am in Ulskeist, what was supposed to be, you know, the building, interestingly enough, on the Royal Dutch Air Force airfields, which is a battlefield, and I'm not really sure whether they should be building on that, but fair enough. But where we are in that Rhine Delta, even though you think, oh, they're digging it all up and it's all going, you know, and I'm no fan of prefab housing and all the rest of it, it's been continually occupied, that area, for 5,000 years. And people have, you know, this biggest Roman camp outside of Nijmegen was there. You know, they've been digging things up from the river because it's the Rhine, of course. That's the motorway of the prehistory.
Yeah.
And there's so much stuff coming out of there. So there's always been people there. So when you think, oh, well, they're digging up this land, you think, well, yeah, humans have always been there. I think the saddest thing of all of it, I mean, you know, I don't sound like, you know, things change and all the rest, is the fact that what I really miss about this country is the bird life. And I'm a bit of an amateur ornithologist, and when I first came here, it was like I was knocked out by the amount of skylarks, the amount of field birds that there were. And whereas the Dutch have done this amazing recovery job on wetlands, they've really, like, bitterns are on the rise, you know, there's a lot of really interesting birds that are coming back. Certainly wetlands birds are really making a comeback, but all the meadow birds and all the migrating birds that needed fields. And where did they all land? They all landed around this area. It's gone.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere for lapwings. There's none. I mean, like, when we first moved to our house, there's a whole field full of lapwings, and they can't nest anywhere. There's nowhere for them to nest.
No.
And birds' DNA doesn't change that much, you know? They look for places, and you're just thinking, where are they going to go? And that's been playing on the back of my mind quite a lot recently. I must be getting a sentimental old fool, but, like, I think that's the biggest thing where... changes in cities is really noticeable.
Yeah.
But also these huge growths of these suburbs, especially in the Randstad. And yet when you go to the other side of the country, there's bugger all still.
Yeah. Yeah, Holland has been, when I arrived, it was the most densely populated country in Europe. And it still is. And they've done nothing but build for 23 years, the nearly 24 years that I've been here.
Yeah.
And yet it's still like Scotland. It's like you've got four or five places that are full and the rest of it's empty.
Incredible.
And I mean, it's bizarrely kind of all crammed into one like blob of stuff, but that blob is getting much more condensed.
And this is interesting thing. How long, you know, again, I'm not really into playing geopolitics on a nice Sunday morning podcast, but it's... You think, like, this must be based around Schiphol, and it must be based around freight, the idea of it coming in from Rotterdam, Amsterdam, Schiphol, and then it gets churned out and it goes wherever it needs to go in Europe.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if, you know, given green policies, what is the future of Schiphol?
That's in the national carriage, isn't it? I mean, the Dutch has always been a trading nation.
They've always moved goods. And some parts of the country just don't move goods around, do you? You don't move goods around Drenthe.
No.
You know, you sit
around Drenthe. There's no point there.
You rarely move around Drenthe.
You're on the highway towards Germany. That's probably the only reason you go there.
Yeah.
No, but you talk about being sentimentality, but that was coming back to the inception of this podcast in itself, was like, the things are changing, that's fine. It's interesting to document that stuff. That stuff means something to us, and those people that we want to talk about mean something, and what we think are of interest and want to kind of put that out there.
Yeah.
Also, like, sometimes it's just like sharing funny stories and stuff, but that stuff matters.
Yeah, it does.
That stuff matters. It's not so much as important if one building has changed from the other, but the stories that are tied to that building are what we should be sharing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's also the idea that, like, I just don't think people have noticed this last 20 years. I had a friend of mine, Peter Brown, who's a journalist, a very good rock journalist. And he just said, you know, Richard, and it was, all right, we'd had a drink. And it was the usual sort of Peter Brown sort of shooting the breeze. And he's a very smart guy, and he can quickly put together, construct an idea. Mm-hmm. And he said, history ended in 2012 with the R film. It's over. No one's looking now. I said, what do you mean? He said, you know, people will document things and they'll put things down and everything, but there's no need for people to actually, you know, see it as part of a rhythm of anything.
Mm.
It's been, the idea of rhythm has been smashed. The idea of time has been, you know, he's like a jigsaw. It's all been smashed up now. Someone's got to put the jigsaw again together. And I thought there's something in that. I don't know what. There's something there. And I think that the more I think about trying to remember, like how to write out in a story this cycle ride from Leiden Central to Lisse.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do it. But I thought, I can do this in my head.
Mm.
I've done this thousands of times. And then I realised, actually, the bit I'm thinking, even the beginning of the bloody story, I can't even map it because I don't even know the road anymore. And how many times do I go to Leiden Station? Like virtually every day?
Mm.
It's wild when you think about it, because the road's gone. The road's gone where the bike used to come down from Leiden Central to Leiden Central Station, which took you directly all the way through, you know, through the suburbs towards Warmond. Mm-hmm. The first part of that road's gone because it's got those weird big bloody buildings next to it. You know, those strange
weird big bloody, no, buildings,
bloody buildings on stilts. What they called? You know,
what listeners can't see is I'm trying to map out squares.
I'm using my finger. I'm solo.
Yeah, the one with all the nice colours.
The Achmea building, the one that's built in a so-called Mondrian style. I used to work in there, actually.
Yeah, I remember you did. Yeah,
it's a lovely building to work in.
But it's also, they're also relatively recently, aren't they? They're sort of 2008,
nine.
So, yeah, that bit, which was, I think if I remember rightly, that was a cycle lane coming in down in.
I'm not even sure if the whole tunnel was there.
I don't think it was.
No. No, because we knew people who were starting to get work on those tunnels. One of which
I remember
we were
being
about
being we there was a party to commemorate the opening of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
We had a street party in the tunnel.
Did you?
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah.
Wow.
So we
it was about 2007, something like that.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, and before that, there was no tunnel.
No, there wasn't. It was just a straight road, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that tunnel took them so much longer because it kept falling in on itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just kept collapsing.
Yeah.
So we had friends who worked on it.
Did we?
Yeah.
Who?
Paul.
Paul worked on it. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure.
For the listeners, if Paul. If he didn't. Paul's his fella, we know.
The artist formerly known as Scruff. I think he got a job on there, or if he didn't get a job on there, he told me he was going for a job on there because when I worked with him back, that's what he was going to do because the money was so good. I think Martin at least tried for a job on it.
Really?
But there's a bunch all from Leiden all ended up working on it.
And is it connected to the building falling apart all the time?
Probably.
No, they just kept complaining that it kept them in good money for a bit longer.
Yeah.
I'm sure they worked on it. If they didn't work on it, they were trying to work on it because I can remember Paul telling me back, it's really good money. It's good. He was going to go for it. And I was like, I don't fancy doing that. Sorry.
No, but can you imagine there's a whole tunnel that wasn't there?
Yeah. Crazy, isn't it?
How much that changes all the traffic.
The thing is, I can't imagine it now. I can vaguely remember, I vaguely have memories of seeing it being built. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean. Like, but the thing is, there's so many pictures of the bloody Peterskirk and the Burcht and all these sort of things of old Leiden.
That haven't changed in 400 years.
In 400 years.
Yeah.
But are there any photographs of pre-tunnel Leiden, pre-tunnel Central Station Leiden? Are there any photographs of, you know, the sub and multiplex and all the rest of it outside of our, you know, furtive snapshots or this sort of stuff? I'm not sure, you know.
Probably. I'm not sure where to start for that.
Mm. Yeah, it's a dead interesting question, isn't
it? Local newspaper would be the only place you'd get something in case there was an incident around that area. That's where you'd normally find it.
And that's probably the only place you'd have to ask a snapper from the Leidse Dagblad or Haarlemse Dagblad. And again, I'm not sure whether they would keep those records up intact. I'm not spinning.
Yeah,
yarns,
most of them probably will.
Yeah.
Because they will probably have it to use for other stories they run in the past.
Yeah, right. Well, I know what I'm going to
do. The funny thing
is
that I remember as a kid when we used to go to, when you were in class, one of the first things you had to buy is a bus atlas.
Mm.
was a green book, which had all kinds of maps of Holland.
Mm.
And you can also go detailed in more regional things. And it will show, it would show you all kinds of maps that will have all kinds of different stories. And as a kid, you had to go to it and use it for school stuff. But everybody in Holland needed to get that book.
Mm.
It was a mandatory book. And if you go into most of the houses, there was always one version of that book there.
Mm.
So it's very interesting to see that every Dutch person knows this book. And you were telling, when we started, we were talking about maps and stuff. Mm. And I think for most Dutch people, that's their biggest recollection to being introduced to watching a map.
Yeah.
Oh, when I was a kid, I used to love reading the AA road atlas.
Oh, they're amazing,
right? Yeah. Because also they were like A3 size. Yeah, they're really, really big
ring bound things.
Thing, beautiful, big maps. And whenever we would go somewhere, or if we'd go to visit like Aberdeen or this, that, and the other, but before we go, I'd get the thing and I'd follow the road and say where we're going to go and what we're going to go past. And like, I used to love kind of flicking through that thing, and then also looking to find. Like look through to find out where my village was and what was close and what were that. Mm. Always, I think it partly came from, I just wanted to get out of that village and wanted to go and see where everything else was.
Yeah.
Or I'd be watching watching Family Fortunes on TV, some game show, and they say, where are you from? And they'd say this town, where's that town? And then I'd go and have a look and find out where that was to kind of build my own map in my head. And there are certain maps like the A Road Lab, I could quite happily sit and spend an hour flicking through that, just looking at those maps.
Yeah.
But the one that I've never got away with is the London A to Z, because it's too bloody small. It's a massive, big, thick book. Right?
I have mine. Yeah.
But you got to go through, and it's a great thing, but the map's so small that you end up normally having to go between two or three pages to get to what you want.
The other thing is, you always can't ever reconcile yourself, despite, you know, my first time going to London in the 1980s, is the size of the streets.
Yeah.
Because they're much bigger than everywhere else. Yeah. And this is no joke.
Yeah.
You think to yourself, oh, I'll walk down Holborn, that's easy enough. You know, an hour later
yeah.
You got past Oldgate or something.
The scale of it's quite huge. Quite and this ridiculous. Is something
that, well, you know yourself, what looks doable on a map is not doable when you're walking it. And this is something that I always... It always tickles me when, and also then you'll have bits of London that are higgledy-piggledy streets as soon as you hit Piccadilly and north of the Royal Academy of Art and all the rest of it. It's all nice little streets and everything. And then you hit Soho and then Fitzrovia. And that's all, you know, little passageways that hasn't really changed. And then you think, and then you just go a bit further and then you're back into big street country again.
Yeah.
Or you go around Marble Arch, which might as well be a runway at Schiphol, you know? And this is, it probably is a sizable, I think you probably could get a 747 down there. But these things are something that you sort of, it's London's quite strange for that.
Yeah, and London's got one of the undoubtedly greatest maps ever. Mm-hmm. Ever put together is the tube map.
Oh, it's genius.
Right? It's an incredible piece of work.
It is.
And it lies through its teeth far as the distance between places.
Because you look at the tube map
and there are some that look like, oh, that's quite close. No, there's like 40 minutes between those two.
And then there's some
where there's massive gaps between things and you walk out and you look across the street, it's there. But if you've gone in one and gone down and then gone and swapped lines and come back and then you come up and you're 50 meters away from where you started,
it
can get quite annoying.
It's an amazing
piece of work because it's a fantasy land.
Yeah.
It is. It's absolutely nothing. It bears no resemblance to reality.
It's brilliant.
It is a fantastic map.
But to bring it back to now, do you use a Google map?
I do. And it is one of the biggest banes of my life because Google Maps has a tendency, and it might just be me, but it has a tendency to, if you were like, you look and you start walking in a direction, you'll be walking down the street for 5 minutes and then suddenly, like the little thing that you've been following that says you're going north actually turns around and says, no, you've been going south for the last 5 minutes. Like,
no,
it's like it just like the technology sometimes gets away with itself and it can point you in the wrong direction. I'd much rather just look at it, go, where is that? Build that map in my head and then go and find it, than follow it like religiously on my phone.
Yeah, Google Maps is interesting. I use a directions thing and I try to memorize the directions bit. So I look at the names of the streets and it would say like, go right down here, go right. I'll remember the first three streets or something and then I'll go, right, I've got to go this way. Because you become, it's quite ridiculous using it because you think to yourself, you can actually just get addicted walking it when you think to yourself, I don't need to look at it because I can see where I'm going, but you'll start looking at it because you're thinking,
no, you know. I have to use it like an old fashioned map.
Yeah.
Just take a picture of it, look at it and go.
I only use it.
You don't listen to the directions.
No, don't go that far. Never listen.
Very rarely.
Never. Yeah. I think the interesting thing about Google Maps is it's really useful if you're really stuck. If you're completely you're on a train and you're thinking, where the fuck am I? Because you can't see anything or you don't know where you are, it's just fields. And then you go, and then you can look on Google and then you pull out a bit and you think, ah, right, I'm there. And that's actually quite nice.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I think it's not that great.
You know what might be interesting to do? Because I've done this a couple of times is, you know, like Street View. Well, how often they update that can change depending on where it is.
Yeah.
So you can literally travel in time down one street because where they've captured something in a town, they maybe did it last year.
Yep.
But then you go down into like a little village next door, they probably haven't been there for 5 years.
Yep.
And then sometimes you can literally like just go down and go, oh, that's not there anymore. So it becomes like this little historical document in itself.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting to like, there's a couple of times that we've been out on holiday and the Google van has come past. And there's a couple of times where I can like go to a place in France and I know that I'm still standing on that corner like that. And it's like, it's like you can see yourself in a past life almost.
Okay.
So it's quite weird, but that's only on a French mapping site. It's called mappy.com. If I go out like that, there's me and Sammy. So my son sitting having an ice cream and I'm sat there and I know, and we're on this street. And if I look on Google or that was a street view, we're not there. But if I look at mappy.com, we're still on that corner. It's quite that I find something about that's quite fascinating, because also I know people who go back and like their parents are still in the garden.
Yeah.
Weeding. Yeah. And they lost their parents 2 or 3 years ago, but they'll go on Google Maps every now and again, go down the road and look over and there's the parents in the garden. Stuff like that I find fascinating. Now, it's a total kind of happenstance. I mean, it's just there for people to help people. But the stories that thing can tell, I find amazing.
Yeah, that is really, really good. Hey, here's a new business idea. Let's try to make a map of London Station from 2005 from photos, you know what I mean? It's not what Hockney was doing, isn't it, really, that whole thing? Yeah. Hey, anyway, it's we've been talking for about nearly an hour about maps, which I find, well, sensational, really. I don't know if anyone's still awake out there in listener land, but if you are, well, thanks for being with us. We've enjoyed your patience and your company for this time at least, and hopefully we'll see you next time.
Yes.
Take care.
Bye-bye.